Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night in that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Before we start our show tonight, it's with heavy hearts that we acknowledge the violence that is taking place over the weekend. And for those that have passed, and for their families, I want to dedicate this moment of silence, followed by our ring bell. Thank you. All right, well, let's get on with our show. And, a lot of great action the ring this weekend, of course, with the upsets. Now we're going to see what's going to happen in that light heavyweight division. Just as a moment in passing here, when you look at a slate of fights, you had Chris Ariola, a Mexican, against Kalinowski, a Polish native. Both sides carrying their flags, waving their flags. No violence toward each other. We had Curtis Stevens fighting another gentleman that was, I'm not sure what country he was from, but no violence. So, I'm not saying that boxing is perfect, but we do manage to bring a plethora of people to these matches. And we might have a few scuffles, but no violence to this extent. Anyway, let's get back to talking about the fights here. Before we talk about the fights, let's talk a little bit about Canelo. And him being stripped of the IBF title, what does this mean? actually, probably very little, since the WBC has decided that he has his own continent and he has his own belt. Does the IBF diminish his image? politically in the Boxing Association, but WBC, WBO, Golden Boy, and The Zone. I don't think they're really going to lose any sleep over him losing the IBF title or him being stripped of the IBF title. I'm sure there'll be some type of, well, there already has been some feedback from it. But monetarily, he's not going to lose a dime. As a matter of fact, it'll save him sanctioning fees for the IBF. Is he popular enough to make a Floyd Mayweather move and go out on his own? Well, I don't think Oscar today. Oscar's going to go for that. I don't think Golden Boy is quite in that business or ready to do that yet. Takes a lot of money, a lot of capital. I don't know. I mean, does he have the chutzpah? Can Canelo really control that type of crowd to say, well, I don't need the belts. I don't need your sanctioning bodies. Let's get it on. That's a conversation I'm going to have with the professor when he comes through. By the way, our second half hour, the half-hour mark, we will be joined by the champ. Champ's going to grace us with his presence today. We're going to talk a little bit about Chris Areola's role in the heavyweight division and Kawanaki's power to put much in seats. What does this mean for Chris Areola? What does this mean for the young gentleman, Curtis Stevens? What's going to go with him? Got a few questions for the champ there. Of course, injuries. We're going to talk about injuries, different things that happened in the ring. So it'll be good to have the champ back. Hopefully the professor will be here pretty soon. Miss Melissa Smith is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit about girls boxing, talk about the event that happened last night, even though it wasn't televised, and just let her get us caught up with the world of women's boxing. So, with that being said, usually in this spot, we have Iceman with us. But the Iceman is actually traveling. He's coming back from Mexico. And speaking of the light heavyweight division, he is training with a guy that has a hard stake in that division, the hold of the title. That's Mr. Artem Panafita. Now that John Pascal has taken the title, you do know that Benavidez also fights out of Canada. So just imagine, here is a genuine put butts in seats for real in another country once again. John Pascal against Artem Benavidev, are we going to hear about it? Is it going to happen? I'm pretty sure we could put that in Montreal or Toronto, and I'm pretty sure it'd be a sellout, if not close to a sellout, and it'll be action-packed. I'm going to talk about Pascal's performance with the rest of the panel. But it wasn't was that Pascal needed the headbutt. But he did need those two knockdowns. And it was... I don't know. I thought Curtis should have thought about maybe retirement, maybe training or something other than getting back in the ring. 32 months is quite a long time to lay off. But when you look at Curtis's last two fights, you look at the Lemieux fight, especially. I'm trying to get my box right up here. You look at the devastating knockout by David Lemieux. I mean, they're still showing that on the highlights. He came down in weight. He did manage to beat Rafael Cruz. I mean, Carlos Cruz. Carlos Cruz was an 18-2 fighter. He had absolutely no experience, but you can see. In his last six fights, he lost the decision to Nadam, a rather unanimous decision, then the KO by David Lemieux. You look at the way that he was handled by Mr. Amatosa. So, I think some of that cerebralness is gone, along with some of that speed and power that he possessed. Remember, he went down a weight class, it certainly didn't seem to help. I realize that he's only had 8 defeats, 30 wins. But when Father Time catches up with this, I don't know if that's a pun or not. But anyway, at 34 years old, everyone's not going to be a Canine Bundridge or a Manny Pacquiao. Some fighters need to, find another way to channel the things that they're best at. And I think Curtis is at that point in his career. There was also another fight on that wasn't covered by TV, and this was another fighter that. Lost it on the other part. And we've all cheered for him at one time or another in his career. But Julian Sosa, he lost his first fight to a gentleman that was 14-10, Brian Jones. Now, 13-0, it doesn't really hinder his career, but it means that he just simply has to start over. We also had a women's bout on that we want to talk to Melissa about. It was Helen Joseph against Anita Kiss. Ms. Kiss, I've heard of before. Helen Joseph, I have to admit, I know very little about. So I'm sure she can actually let us know a little bit more about Helen Joseph. Just looking around here, trying to find some other things. Marcus Brown, Cable Truax. We've seen a couple really, really bad cuts this year. And I kind of have to wonder, actually, I think I'm going to cut that in Tuesday. I kind of wonder, like, with these areas, especially when you have deep inside goals like this, is it still like the old days where the scar tissue building up and that becoming a place of a weakness? Are there new treatments? Are there new medications that make treatment better that absolutely help in the healing process? It's good conversation to have with the next cut man I have on the show. Maybe I'll see if I can get Mr. Mike Rodriguez. Continuing on, the other fighter that I was also talking about that lost was Carlos Negron. Carlos Negron, 20-2, up and comer, heavyweight, but he lost to Brian Howard, 14-3, guy that he should have beaten, rated only one star by BoxRec. So what does this do now to Mr. Negron? I guess people thought that he was going to be a heavyweight contender. Also, the term gatekeeper. Now, to me, that wasn't a title that you really wanted or that you sought. When sports announcers said that you were a gatekeeper, that usually meant that you were the guy that had to fight all of the young guys. You didn't get the big money, but you were always in the big fights. Okay. Chris Ariola accepted the term gatekeeper, and he kind of wore it to me as a badge of honor. I always thought that when you accepted something I always thought that if you accepted that title, you were ready to say that I'm not elite anymore and basically, I'm washed up. I'm the heavy bag for all you young fighters coming up. I thought Dominic Brazil was a great gatekeeper. Big punching bag. Gonna stay there for 12 rounds, take a good whooping, like they say, Timex, take a good looking, and keep on ticking. I guess now Chris Ariola is the gatekeeper. When you look at his body of work, yes, he's had three shots at the championship. last night under Joe Goosen was probably the best Chris Ariola that we'll see or at least have seen in these last years. So I'm actually wondering would it be in his best interest to keep the promise that he made before the fight, which was if he lost the fight, he'd go into retirement. And the reason why I say this is because even after all of the criticism that I've had for his career, Chris Ariola has taken a lot of punishment. He got knocked out in the eighth round by Deontay Wilder, Stiverne. He lost to Stiverne. We saw with Stiverne what happened to Stiverne against Deontay. He fought against Klitschko. Klitschko he fought. But what I'm saying is, it's not that he really needs the money. He's a family man now. You saw he had his little boy in the ring. Enjoy your little boy. You know, don't let your son have to feed you soup when he's 12. That's kind of just my thought on that. I see the professor is in here, so let's get started with the professor before we go any further. What's going on, professor?
Not much, J.K.
I had, before the show started, of course, I had talked about the tragedy that we experienced across the country. And I mentioned, we had a plethora of people come together at those fights last night. I mean, you had the Polish group that was, for Mr. Kronowski. You had, of course, the Mexican and Latinos that were for Chris Ariola. Then you had the fight with Curtis Stevens and the other gentleman that was from the UK, I believe. But my point being is that within the boxing community, we managed to bring all these different cultures together and at least unite for that particular day without violence. And I was just speaking to the audience that, this is one sport that kind of transcends lines, race, creed, and color. Before we get started, you want to make a quick comment on that?
Yeah, man, it's just unfortunate, with the politics of the world. We have to deal with it. It's reality. It goes amongst our community, in your neighborhood. So it's just an unfortunate situation that we're having these events at this time, especially it seems like it's a reoccurring thing, try not to get too far away from boxing, but it seems that a lot of these events start to ramp up when it's election time. So somebody can talk about what they're going to do to fix things and how can they implement their, plans into trying to turn things around just so they can get, people vote. So that's another topic for another day, but We had some action over the weekend, a lot of action, a lot of news and notes that can't wait to get into.
Well, the first thing I want you to get into is Canelo, the IBF, and I didn't know that I signed that. What do you mean? I mean, you know, Oscar, you know, like going behind Canelo's back and signing documents here. What's your thoughts on it? And you kind of brought it to our attention earlier, so can you tell us what's going on here?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, it seems that Canelo deal with the Zone supposed to been, you know, a Canelo deal. But if this is correct, from what I'm hearing, is that instead of it being two separate budgets, like, okay, Golden Boy made a deal with the Zone to put on some Golden Boy cards on the Zone, and then Canelo have his deal. That's one thing. But to my understanding, it's one deal. Basically, De La Hoya piggybacked off a Canelo deal, and basically they're utilizing Canelo budget to put on the Golden Boy fight, if I'm correct from what I'm hearing. And I heard it from a couple of reliable sources. And you know, if that's true, that's kind of Don Keenish, sort of like Mike Tyson and Don King, you know, that's not cool. That's why people were scratching their head, like, why is Canelo talking about, you know, with the matchmaker, and he's apologizing? Like, what is he apologizing for? That's because, you know, he had no knowledge that, you know, that the matchmaker or that was the particular move that Golden Boy was making. So, this information that I'm giving you right now, if that is true, JK, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, that's a little bit more than Don Kish. Let's see. I think the popular word now is collusion. Since there is no more conspiracy, but I mean, you know, that's like me, you know, putting in a backdoor deal to profit off of your industry or your business. I don't see how that comes off as legal.
Yeah, and that's why it's been a little hold up with this Canelo getting an opponent, because, you know, this could get some legal ramifications. I mean, Canelo could easily try to sue and, oh, crap, back out of the deal.
But here's another thing that I don't quite understand. I understood Canelo's deal with DAZN. And, you know, the amount of money that he's getting. But then I read that Dovchenko, as things stand now, the reason why he took this fight with Dovchenko was because Dovchenko would be willing to settle for $7 million rather than the
35. Hold up. Who are we talking about, JK? You said Canelo, then you said Lomachenko.
No, I said Dovchenko.
Oh, Dovchenko. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay, Dovchenko. I'm sorry. But anyway, what I was saying was Dovchenko was supposed to get $7 million rather than the 35%. That he would be entitled to under a purse fist Now, once again, it seems to me like Demetrius Andrade, the Charlo twin, and a couple other, well, Devchenko, I guess, would be among those three. But I don't think that Demetrius or the Charlo twin would fighting for $7 million when there's so much more on the line. What do you think about that arrangement?
What? I got to disagree with you with that, JK. You tell me what other fighter besides Canelo is Demetrius Andre or Jermall Charlo is going to get $7 million to fight. I'll wait.
But no, you're missing my point. My point is, why is Devchenko worth $7 million, but Demetrius or the Charlo brothers are not, when they've probably been longer out there waiting for the fights?
No, it's not that. This is, all right, let me break it down for you, JK. See, this is where the part where people get mixed up is. That's why Uncle Al is playing chess. He's not playing checkers. All right, this is what it is. All right, so Canelo / De La Hoya, Golden Boy, was clout chasing. They was throwing those names out there, the Demetrius Andre, the Kovalev, the Kellum Smith. That was just to keep their name out there, to keep their name buzzing, and basically clout chasing. To show fans, like, hey, I am trying to make a fight with these guys, but, you know, unfortunately, these guys don't want to take the fight. So, it's sad to say that De La Hoya was backed into a situation basically with Al Haymon. Think about this. The reason why they didn't want to pay Dovchenko, because they feel that, you know, he wasn't worth that money. You know, they didn't want to fight Dovchenko, but Dovchenko is the mandatory. So that's why they only started these negotiations late, because they was trying to get all these other deals done, but unfortunately they couldn't. So that's why they ended up stripping Canelo, because he couldn't come up with a deal between him and Dovchenko after they gave him an extension. And they didn't want to go to a purse bid, because why? It's a possibility that Uncle Al could outbid Golden Boy, which has happened this within the last year, where you had Bob outbid Eddie Hearns a couple of times. Why you think Eddie Hearn had to take the guy we just saw fought last week over to ESPN instead of the fight being on the Zone? Why am I having a brain fart? Was it Maurice Hooker last week versus on the Bob Arum card? Yeah, remember, he's a zone fighter, but Bob Arum won the purse bid. That's how they was able to have that fight on ESPN. So imagine waking up and looking at your phone, JK, and it says Canelo next fight is going to be on Fox or on PBC Showtime. Imagine that. De La Hoya would flip over in his grave, as Charles Barkley would say. So that's why Canelo ended up getting stripped, because De La Hoya didn't want to bid.
Yeah, I did kind of get that part, but you certainly brought the rest of it to light. But guess who we have on the line tonight, Ron?
Oh, man, it must be somebody that's been on milk cartons. It got to be somebody on the milk carton. Got to be.
Excuse me, sir, have you been on the milk carton?
You know, the problem with milk is that I'm lactose intolerant.
What's up, champ? How you doing tonight?
What's going on, everybody? What's going on, Jabron? It's your relentless
Nothing much. Nothing much, man. It's like the more and more you stay away, the more and more your division heats up, man.
Well, shoot, that's a beautiful thing, man, because for the first time in a very long time, I really want to say since my era, we have the deck full of spades. And they showed it yesterday, man, with the top six heavyweights, man, and it's just a beautiful thing to see, you know, what Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz?
Andy Ruiz,
the Cuban guy, the guy that just won last night. You know, it's looking pretty good, man. I have to say, man, it's been a long time, and history always repeats itself. It's just beautiful to see, man.
And what was your thoughts on the record breaking last night? If you didn't know, that was the record breaking performance in the heavyweight division. No, that was the most punches thrown in a heavyweight fight.
Yeah, man. I was amazed because. You know, so this is the thing, man. You know, I see boxing with the eyes of a mathematician, and I say that because I understand body types, I understand styles, I understand foot movement, I understand, you know, defense, I understand every single trinket, if you will. When it comes to fighting inside of the ring, man, offense, defense, holding, just you name it. And yesterday, what I saw just really amazed me because people would look at these guys and say, oh, well, you know what? These are two out-of-shape guys, but they don't understand body types. These two are like bull whales. Those real big bull whales with the big old tusks, man, big walruses, if you will, but not that they're fat, but it's just their body type. These are the type of dudes that can lift weights for 100 years, and they're not going to put on one single muscle. To see these guys demonstrate what I've been talking about for a very long time was such a beautiful thing. You got two guys that are well over 6 foot, 230 pounds. These guys are, what, 260 and 240, and they fought like two guys that were 215 throwing punches. And, you know, with heavyweights, man, every punch can be the last punch, you know. And to see these guys just welling at each other, taking it, coming back, man, that is what the sport of boxing was meant to be. That's the true epitome, if you will, of the heavyweight division, and that's what made Mike Tyson so great, was because when he done it, all his fights ended early. You know what I mean? And so to just see that, man, to see that trend where it's not about being tall anymore and using your jab and fighting with this style, keeping the man away and throwing the big right hand and winning the fight. You got guys like Deontay Wilder that, as big as he is, as tall as he is, as 6'8", he will try to step in and knock your block off, man. He's not just going to run. And so you have now drawn the interest back to the heavyweight division because now we have fighters that people want to see. And listen, don't get me wrong. I love the Klitschko's. I love the reign that they had, their time. Especially being from Europe, you know what I mean? Like, you never had a white heavyweight champion, you know, if you just call it what it is. And it was great. you know, for the sport. But now, we're seeing guys not based on color saying, "Listen, I'm a warrior. I'm not gonna run. I'm coming to get it." People want to see that, man. And when a guy like Anthony Joshua, to his surprise, he found that a true American bulldog ain't gonna box, but he's gonna fight no matter how big he is. And that's why he lost to Reese, because he thought muscles matter in boxing. Muscles do not matter. It's that brain inside of your head, based upon your conditioning and your determination to win, that really matters in the sport. And last night, that's what we saw. You saw two dudes that it wasn't about who was the best skilled, and it really came down to who wasn't even in the best shape, but it came to who really wanted it the most, man. And I take my hat off to both of those guys. Nobody lost last night at the end of the day, because the fans got their money's worth, the fighters got their money's worth, and boxing is reborn, if you will, because you got all these young lions out here trying to get that title, man, the way that America used to get it, and that's by going to get it. And that's what I think.
Champ, there's levels to this game, and what is your projection as in Adam Kawanowski performance and over his last couple of fights? Where level do you see him at in the heavyweight division?
Okay, so in a spectrum of things, as we see it in boxing now, if he is in the top 10, but then if we look at it on a measuring stick from 0 to 12, 12 being the champion, I would put him at around 4, to be honest with you, in my opinion. Because I would have to see another fight with a fighter that I felt was in his prime and who was not somebody who is on the downside of their career, if you will, when you talk about Chris Areola, because Areola, as they said, is like the gatekeeper, as Deontay Wilder said. You know, he's the guy that the only way to prove yourself worthy to fighting a champion is getting past a guy like Areola. And that ain't to say that Areola couldn't have won or couldn't win, but if you really want the other guys that got belts out there to recognize you, you got to beat somebody that they would respect. And they know beating Areola is not an easy thing. So the fact that he got past them, then that gives him a notch up. So what I would say now, going into that fight, I would have said he was a 4. Now, just for the benefit of the doubt, I would give him a 6 on that level. But again, that's the top level. I would say 6 until he can prove me worthy of being rated up there to be put in the same breath with the Deontay Wilder or any of these other guys. Like if he fought Ortiz, I would, you know, that would be a defining fight for me to really give him an even higher ranking, you know, because that would be a great fight.
Yeah. So did you get to see the whole card, the PBC card, last night?
I did not get to see the whole card. I didn't get to see the fight where what was this?
The co-main event was Marcus Brown versus Gene Pascal.
Right. I did not get when I got to my television, man, it was the last almost the last round. Yeah, it was the last round. And no, matter of fact, the fight had just ended. So I didn't get to see any of that. And I've been so busy that I didn't even get a chance to, you know, play it back.
Well, just recapping, we had a great action, man. All the cards were great action. Marcus Brown, which was the WBC interim champion, fought against former champion Gene Pascal. Action-packed fight. Marcus Brown came out establishing his jab. in the earlier rounds. Pascal proceeded to keep pressure on him, and we'll say around the third round, Pascal was closing the distance and hitting him with solid shots. And before the round ended, boom, he hit him with a one-hitter critter that knocked Marcus Brown across the ring. He recovered, and over the next couple of rounds, you know, Pascal seemed to get the momentum going his way and knocked Marcus Brown a couple of more times. And unfortunately, eighth round, they sustained an accidental headbutt, which, you know, Marcus Brown, it got down to the white meat. He was bleeding very badly. So the fight went to the scorecards, and unfortunately, Marcus Brown lost his interim position, losing to Gene Pascal, and just keeping that light heavyweight division honest, man. And this is the year of the upset. JK, you got any thoughts on that? Well, JK must be muted, or he fell asleep, as K9 would say. But, champ,
neither one.
Yes,
champ, before we talk about Pascal fight, I have to ask you about the term that you use, well, the term that Deontay Wilder used, gatekeeper. Now, when you were champ, gatekeeper to us, you know, the boxing public meant, you know, a guy kind of on his way down, you know, he was a tough fight, but you were kind of expected to beat him. And it wasn't really a term of endearment. Why all of a sudden, when we start talking about Chris Areola, not only does he accept it, but all of a sudden it seems to be a term of endearment. I mean, is there a difference between the pride that you felt as a fighter and the pride that these guys felt? I mean, if somebody called you a gatekeeper, they might have had a fight.
Well, I definitely get what you're saying, because that is not a term that you want to be coined. You know, you don't want to be known as the gatekeeper. What happens is, when you have a person, okay, so let me give you the definition of a gatekeeper, my definition of a gatekeeper, okay? My definition of what I would consider personally a gatekeeper, not by insult, but anybody who has fought for a world title more than two or three times and never won the title, then I personally would call the gatekeeper, because they're right there at the gate. They keep knocking at the gate. So in order to get past, in order to fight for a world title, I think it's only fair that a young up-and-coming fighter first defeat somebody who has challenged for the world title at least more than once or twice. And then I would say, okay, you're fighting a gatekeeper. So it's not that I consider anybody washed up or over the hill, but I want to just make it clear that my definition is a guy who challenges for the title more than once or twice and never won the world title and still doesn't have a title. To me, I'll call them the gatekeeper, because at any time they have an opportunity to step up and get through that door that they keep knocking on. So, like I say, if you get one of these young fighters out here, I think it's only fair before they fight for a world title that they fight at least one gatekeeper. And you have plenty of them out there that I would consider, like the guy that Deontay Wilder just knocked out before that, you know, Charles Martin, as a matter of fact. I think he's a gatekeeper to an extent. But
he was a
champion. He was a champion. Just like the guy that Deontay beat when he won the title. What's the Haitian dude?
Severn.
I think he's a gatekeeper now. because I don't necessarily see them in the future with the title. So that's why I say the gatekeeper. I think that if I had to say who's the silver medalist, I would say they are the silver medalist. But it ain't to say they couldn't get the title, because anything is possible, you know. But it's just that, like I say, a person, in my opinion, my definition is a person who never won a title, who keeps fighting for titles more than once or twice. That's a gatekeeper.
Okay. All right. I'll accept your definition. I still say it wouldn't have been pleasant for somebody to call you a gatekeeper during your career. But anyway,
again, they're not on the upswing of their career, so that's why I say their best days, in my opinion, are behind them. Don't you think that's fair to say when you speak of an Areola? He's not a young man, and he's already talking about retiring and things like that. Like, I don't think that would be an insult to him, because even he said himself that he wanted to retire. So that's what I call a gatekeeper.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Areola, let's face it, you know, I mean, I thought, you know, that perhaps he should have retired sooner. You know, at one time he had I thought he would be the next Mexican champion, not Andy Ruiz.
He won it before Andy Ruiz. I definitely thought, and that's why I was so excited about it, man, because, you know, I'm a fan of Chris Areola, you know, because he came in after me, and I watched this dude coming out of L.A. destroying boys, man. So that's family, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, his kids are getting older, and you know, for me, you know, I'd rather for him to be telling kids, to, you know, bedtime stories to his kids when he's 12 years old than have a 12-year-old kid feeding him soup. So, you know, I don't know, maybe it is time for him to retire, but, you know. You were talking about that cut, Professor. We saw that something like that happened with the Truax Peter Quillen fight. Does it seem to you like these cuts are getting more serious? I mean, I don't want to say, you know, that it's because of any certain thing, but maybe it's a buildup of a lot of things. You know, we're talking about, you know, monitoring, training, you know, different things to make fighting more safe. Could you and the champ kind of talk about that? I mean, you know, headbutts have always kind of been a problem, but it seems now, you know, they're getting deeper, they're getting more serious. You know, is there something that's possible? You know, I mean, are the clotting agents different that we're taking? Or are we taking supplements? You know, I know some people have to take blood thinners. You know, I mean, what's your thought on this? Champ, you've been in the ring before, and I know you've experienced cuts and things, even worse conditions. But I'm thinking of the safety of the fighter here. What's your thoughts when you see, you know, how bad these things are starting to get?
So I'm trying to understand your question. So your question is, what are my thoughts on the cuts of the fighters, on how bad they're starting to get, or one specific fighter?
No, I'm talking about the fight. This is the second fight that we've seen in you know, this year so far. Already, we saw a couple last year, and I'm trying to think. You know, you're a guy that talks about diet and conditioning and things like that, and you teach the young kids. So I'm wondering, you know, like, is it because of the things that we are putting in our body, you know, and this is just speculation. I'm like, you know, I'm just asking your opinion here. I'm not, you know, saying anything specific, but, you know, when things start to get worse, you start to think of a cause.
Right? So I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question, because the thing that I know about cuts, man, when you get scar tissue in a certain area, and then it starts to what is it like? What do you call that? Hematoma when it overgrows. When it overheals, do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So a doctor showed me how when a person gets a cut, and that cut, especially with as they would consider it in the medical world, African American skin, our skin. We have a tendency to overheal. So when we get cuts, they have a tendency to overheal. And the way that they used to use the stitches, like there are a lot of things that a person should be doing in boxing to try to toughen their skin. Because, like I used to use, like, pickle juice and things like that to rub on my skin. Like they said, using ocean water, salt water. Like I've heard, like urine, things like that. But you know, I guess they work. I mean, I've had plenty of fights where I've had my share of cuts. But I think that, like, you also gotta remember the content of the glove. You know, the wrap. Sometimes the wraps are very hard underneath the glove. Sometimes the foam. You know, just all of that matters. Just the material of the glove that is made of. Like, we may have to take a look at that. Like, sometimes it may not be the force of the punch as much as it could be the material of the gloves or the hardness of the hand wrap. So, you know, there are a lot of things to really consider. But I don't know, man. Like, I don't really know what I could say that would. Actually, well, how we could make it better. I just think that we have to weigh out everything because, like I say, it could have something to do with the material of the gloves. It has something to do with the material of the hand wraps. All that could factor in. And then at the end of the day, it could also have a lot to do with the skin of the actual opponent or the fighter because, like I said, if you already got scar tissue built up, then getting hit on that scar tissue always makes it open up even easier. So that's just my two cents on that.
We are now joined by the First Lady of Boxing, Jabron. I thought we'd have somebody else that you enjoy on the show. So, Jabron, Ms. Melissa Smith.
Hey, how is everybody?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well. So are you guys talking about Adam and Kamnowski and Areola fight last night, or?
Yeah, you know, you're actually right on time because we were about to dig into that subject. So I think we should start it off by saying, ladies first. I would like to know what your take is on that fight and what was your thoughts.
Well, I mean, to say it was a slugfest was the understatement of the year. It was really quite entertaining, and you know, Ariola looked great. I mean, he was sharp, he was crisp. I mean, Adam's younger and had more, he was certainly a little bit more active, although God knows he needs to learn how to move his head. But it was quite a fight. I think towards the end, I know my heart was a little bit in my mouth in terms of just how much punishment both men were taking from each other. I mean, when somebody's hitting you who's 250 pounds, 260 pounds, that's quite a lot of force to your head. So that was a little bit concerning. But I really enjoyed the fight tremendously. How did you guys think about it?
Well, I just want to say that's a great – I love the way that you just put that out, the way you said that, explained that, because it was a very, very exciting fight. And the whole time, as you were thinking, it's great to know that I wasn't the only one thinking that, because the thing about the difference between a heavyweight and every other fighter in the boxing world is that a heavyweight got so much more force behind all of his punches, even his lightest punches, lightest looking punches, have the weight of a 250 pound man behind it. So if he's throwing that many punches throughout the course of a 12 round fight, whoever is on the receiving end of that, in which both of these gentlemen were all night, those are damaging punches that down the road, at some point, if they continue to get hit like that, it's going to end their career much faster than a fighter with good defense. And Emmanuel Stewart, rest in peace, once we sat down and we had this kind of conversation about styles and about hard styles and versus a guy that's tough and gets hit versus a guy that doesn't get hit, you know, with skills, you know, because we were trying to compare the two. And then he was saying, you know, every time a fighter gets hit, it takes a little out of him and a little out of him. And you know what? I'm here to tell the sign, because as a heavyweight champion of the world, in order to get there, I had to fight my way to the top. And I am the first person to say, you know what, Mr. Emmanuel Stewart, he was right. Every fight that you have, every time you have a war, it takes a little out of you and a little out of you. And that fight last night, I mean, that could almost be, I mean, it was a war, and it's the type of fight that it tremendously will take a lot out of a fighter. And I hope that both of those fighters rest themselves a lot after this and allow themselves to do things that will allow their brains to heal, because when you go later into fights, which is why they stop fights from being 15 rounds to 12 rounds, so scientists have proved that as fights go on, you lose more and more fluid between your skull and your brain. And the more you get hit, the more your brain hits up against your skull. And that's how the damage is accumulated over the years. So therefore, a guy that has a tough style like they do, they have that bang-bang style. Studies have shown that guys with those kind of styles, they tend to suffer more physical damage in the latter years of their career. If you go and look back to all the fighters that brawled just like them, you know, you have your exceptions, but a lot of fighters that we know that we don't really speak of because they were never champions, but guys that were in the gym and they were warriors, they went to war year after year, time after time. You know, you see these guys now, and then they're walking on pins and needles. So I hope that Adam, as good as he is, I hope as exciting as he is as a fighter, I hope that as great as I love to say, I was very excited to see him throwing those punches. I truly hope that he can get his defense better, because fighting guys like Deontay Wilder, if he is tough enough to take those kind of punches for 12 rounds, I would think that he will have massive mental issues later in his life once boxing is finished. And we can't just focus on, oh, he's a good fighter now. We don't care what happens to him later because he's our responsibility. So we just hope that, I just hope, and I think I speak for everybody in boxing, that, yeah, that was a great and entertaining fight, but I understand through being a world champion and by just being a fan and just being a lover of the sport, that that is not the type of style that has longevity in boxing, because an accumulation of punches will definitely do a lot of damage to you, not only mentally, but, you know, I mean, psychologically, but also physically as well. So, you know, let's just continue to hope that he can give us these great fights, but just with less damage, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was very pleased with the fact that the ringside doctor took a look at Chris Areola a couple of times, but I think he should have looked at Adam too, because Adam was taking a lot of punishment, especially in the later rounds. You know, his head was snapping back. And, you know, I just hope they both go see their doctors this week and get a brain scan and just see where they are so they can, as you say, take the time necessary to heal. You know, I guess we're all sensitive to this because of the two deaths in the ring most recently. And those were little guys. It's not like they're big heavyweights. And your point is well taken on the loss of fluid in the brain, you know, as you're dehydrated. And, you know, there's at least with heavyweights, they're not so worried about making weight. But the smaller weight classes are, and they may drop 40 pounds. You know, may have a walking around weight of 160, 165 pounds, and when you're fighting at 126, that's a lot of weight to lose very quickly, and it does affect your brain, especially if you're dehydrating the last couple of days to make weight. So, I mean, those are all things that are hugely, that really do need to be considered. So, as I said, that was going through my mind as I was also very really entertained last night and enjoying what these guys were able to do. I guess we've just come too far in boxing to close our eyes and pretend it isn't there. I think that one thing I read on Twitter, I think it was Lou DiBella wrote a piece about how he's trying to change his perspective as someone who promotes fights. And one of the things he talked about, speaking of fighters who fight in the phone booth and just bang all night, was Mickey Ward, and the fact that Mickey Ward now has, you know, serious brain illness, brain injuries as a result of his fighting career. And, you know, that it's like terribly sad to think that that's the case, but he's someone that all of us who love boxing love to watch. And, you know, here it is, it's 20 years since he, almost 20 years since he retired, and he's he has brain injuries. So it's a fact of life for fighters, and as you say, for certain types of fighters who just bang away at each other.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. JK, Jabron, you guys have got any thoughts on anything we're talking about?
Yeah. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. What I took away from that fight was that Adam better be counting and thinking his lucky stars, because I took away about round six or round seven, Areola broke his hand. And the second half of the fight, he was one-handed. And that goes to show you the type of, excuse me, the type of work Chris Areola put in preparing for the fight. He got himself in tremendous shape to break your hand like that early in the fight, and still in the last couple of rounds, you still average about 95 punches a round. I mean, my hat goes off to him, because a lot of people would have just called it a night. They would have been like, hey, I ain't got no knockdown in this fight. I'm fighting an uphill battle. I'm at the end of my career. Some people would have just called it a night and been like, look, my hand, I can't go. But he showed grit and determination, and exposed something to Adam Gaye, that his punch output dropped later on in the fight, and it showed that he was winded, and he didn't have his poker face as usual. He was giving a lot of things away. I was taken away in numerous rounds, if you guys caught it, whereas Adam kept looking at the clock. He kept looking at the clock. He'll punch and hold and get in the clinch and hold Areola just long enough so he could keep looking up at the clock trying to see how much time he had. And I just didn't find that's a great thing to give your opponent. And that might be why Areola fought harder, because that gave him momentum. Like, hey, this guy is wearing down. I might could take him out, you know. So those are the little nuances in the game, and that's something that I have to take my hat off to Deontay Wilder, which had a great chemistry in the booth, next to the ring with Lennox Lewis calling the fight. I feel that the chemistry between Lennox and Deontay was better than Goosen and Lennox, because it seemed like they be arguing and going back and forth, and then they get Mancini involved. But the chemistry, it flowed great last night with Lennox and Deontay, them feeding off each other, giving each other respect with their accolades and their boxing IQ and their passion. It showed, you know, they was being fans, not just commentators, but fans while they was calling the fight. And I think that's all I got on that.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Yep.
The other point that I wanted to make was, I mean, do you think that anyone other than Joe Goosen could have brought that out of Chris Areola? I think that's something that we should also, explore, the relationship between Goosen and Chris.
I don't know enough about. So I really, it's hard for me to opine necessarily, other than to say that I've been a Chris Areola fan for years. I've watched him up, I've watched him down. And last night was probably the most on point I recall seeing him in years. So insofar as he was training with Goosen and put in all that work. I mean, he looked great in the ring. He was, at 12 rounds, he was less winded than Adam by a lot. And he was, as Jabron rightly pointed out, he had a broken hand for half the fight. So insofar as Chris Areola placed his trust in Goosen to get him ready and to be there for him through the fight, that had to be huge. But beyond that, it's a little hard for me to speak to it because I don't know enough about the relationship.
I just want to vary off the point just for a minute here, because we did have a ladies bout there, and I had heard of Miss Kiss, but I wasn't really aware of Miss Joseph. Do you want to give us some background on that?
On Ronica's fight. Well, in my estimation, that was the fight of the weekend. That was a 10-round WBC title fight. I'm sorry. You're talking about Helen Joseph's fight on that card. Sorry, wrong fight. Helen Joseph is a Nigerian fighter, and she's been in the States for a while. She is a very, very highly skilled boxer and very strong. She has really very capable of knocking her opponents out and can win by KO and actually did floor Adina Kiss. She has had a hard time getting fights because she's really very good, and a lot of the female fighters in the area, you know, in and around New York, have kind of walked away from fights with her because they, you know, risk losing. And they've always cast her in the role of opponent, so they haven't really wanted to take her on. With this fight against Adina Kiss, she finally got an opportunity to be on a card. Number one, it was the first female fight on a PBC card in rather a long time, so that was really cool. She got to fight at Barclays, which was great, albeit at 5 o'clock, but she still got to fight at Barclays. And she did a really great job acquitting herself in that ring. Adina Kiss has fought probably everyone in and around New York. She's from Hungary, and she's an opponent. She's lost to Amanda Serrano. She's lost to Shelley Vincent. She's lost to Heather Hardy. And now she's lost to in this latest fight. But she's really quite good. She's someone to watch. She is slated to be on a fight card in Connecticut on August 29th, which I found to be surprising that she was taking this fight. But I think she took it on about 2 or 3 weeks' notice, so it was really quick. And as I said, she's supposed to also fight on August 29th, which is a fight with Alicia Napoleon will be on that card as well, defending her super middleweight title. And she's someone certainly to watch and is a very, as I said, a very skilled fighter and really worth seeing what's going to happen with her over the next year or so, because she's someone with very good skills. The other fight I was talking about was Roy Jones Jr.'s fight card out in Las Vegas this weekend with Ronica Jeffrey and Ava Wahlstrom, who some of you probably saw fighting and losing to Katie Taylor earlier in the year. Ava has the super bantamweight title, and that was for WBC. And Ronica Jeffrey, who is a fighter also out of Gleason's Gym in New York, took that fight at 3 weeks' notice and did an exceptional job. That was a highly, highly technical fight. Just 10 rounds of nonstop action and really quite exciting. The judging was poor, to say the least. Had one judge gave it 100-90 to Ronica. Another judge gave it to Wahlstrom 96-94. And then the third judge had it tied at 95 all. So it ended up being a split decision draw. I saw it. I would have given it to Ronica the other way, either 97-93 or 96-94. Although, you know, some folks I respect in who watch women's boxing had it felt that it was scored right at 95-95. But it was a really, really beautifully fought, beautifully executed fight. And unfortunately, it was on UFC Fight Pass. Which is a new platform for boxing, and as well as UFC fights. And the camera work and the camera balance were pretty poor, so it wasn't a great fight to watch because the execution from the technical side, meaning just camera work and so on, wasn't great. But the fighting was fabulous, so if you can catch it, if you didn't see it, I really recommend everybody give that fight a look, because Ronica is someone who I hope will be seen in if not in a return by with Ava Wahlstrom, certainly up for a title opportunity again soon.
All right, well, great recap for women's boxing. Get back to the main event here, Pascal and Marcus Brown. your thoughts about that fight. We were talking about the severeness of that cut. But even more than that, we heard from Scully, even though he's on a plane from Mexico, that, you know, this could possibly set up an all-Canada fight. Benavidez is a champion, Eastern Canada. Now we have John Pascal. What did you think about his performance, and what do you think about that possible matchup?
Is that a question to me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought he was great. I was so happy to see him, to beat him up. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be, gloating at someone losing. But I really was happy. I was pleased for him. He just fought a really smart fight. I was really just happy that he was able to execute what he was there to do. No one had him as someone who was actually going to be able to win. So I found that to be a very exciting opportunity. I really did. And I'm not sure what the future brings for him, but I was very pleased that he won. I really was.
Landon, I know you said you didn't get to watch the action, but you have to be familiar with John Pascal's career. What did you think? Were you one of the ones that also thought that this was going to be a win for Marcus Brown?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Because he's he's on his game, and Pascal's been around for a little while, so I just thought that, it was going to be Brown all the way. But, like she said, you can't count nobody out, and it was great to see that he pulled a rabbit out of the hat,
Jabron, we had kind of talked about it a little bit, but what do you think about Scully's, possible folly? This is a fight that Scully says he would be looking forward to. What do you think about that matchup between Benavidez and Pascal, especially in Canada?
Yeah, that sounds great, but. to my understanding, didn't he just get the deal with ESPN and co-promoted by Top Rank? Scully's guy, Benavidez. So he's on ESPN. So we're looking at politics. So that fight happening, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that with the politics. But the fight overall, last week, I thought it was going to be a competitive fight, but I was thinking Marcus Brown was going to outbox him. But once I watched the press conference and the weigh-in, and I saw how Pascal was mentally starting to get into Marcus' head, if y'all didn't see the weigh-in, it was hilarious.
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, so Marcus Brown over the last year has had some problems with domestic violence in the case. He's had issues with women and they've been calling the police on him and he's been back and forth to court and dealing with that. So John Pascal came to the weigh-in dressed up as a woman. He had on a woman's wig. He was like, since you like to hit women, So he started mentally breaking Marcus during the week leading up to the fight.
Oh, my God, you're
kidding me. So once I saw that, I said, this is personal. It's all game. And if you notice, they was very aggressive against each other in the fight. Whereas clinches, they was punching a little after the clinch when they was trying to break up at the end of the round. This was personal. So once I saw that, I said, no, this is a 50-50 fight.
Wow. fans. That's crazy. But it, but I mean, I really like David Benavidez. I think he's a terrific fighter, and I just don't see that Pascal would defeat him.
Yeah, also,
I don't.
Not,
I, he's just such
David.
A strong fighter. Just physically strong. I just don't. I mean, maybe Pascal can, you know, pull rabbits out of the hat, if you will, because he's an experienced fighter and he, you know, he has that ring IQ. But Benavidez is tough. That would be tough.
That's Arthur, not David. That's Arthur Benavidez, right?
Correct.
Oh, do I have the wrong Benavidez? That's embarrassing.
It's not better B. It's not better B. S. It's better B. F. With a V.
B. E. N. E. V. I. D. A. S.
He's a light heavyweight. You're thinking of
the
super
middleweight. I got the wrong one. Sorry.
Right at 168.
Yeah. I know who you mean. Sorry. Never mind. Wrong one.
That's why we have the professor here. She has
to. My bad. Maybe I was getting punched last night, anyway.
But, guys.
Was another fight on the card, Curtis Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We got to talk about Curtis. I actually thought, you know, him moving down in weight was a bad idea. Especially, I can understand why he didn't stay up at the weight that he was after the way that David Bermudez knocked him out. Knockout of the year, as a matter of fact, I believe it was. But anyway, Curtis is another one of those guys. I mean, both of those guys are 34 years old, but Curtis, to me, is an old 34, old in ring experience. I believe he had quite an extensive amateur career, and you can see Curtis's legs, he just doesn't have the legs for it anymore. Up or down, and this has proved that he can't go down in weight, so I think he's in a very tough position, and, you know, he should possibly think about, you know, finding another job within the profession, you know, getting a young fighter, build him up, something like that, but I don't want to see him take any more punishment. He was down, what, three times in that
mm-hmm.
fight? So, you know, you start talking about safety, you know, hits to the brain. You guys have already covered all that. I mean, you know, he's taking a lot of headshots. I would be very concerned for the safety. But I also think that falls on the trainer and the promoter because, you know, just because a guy comes to you and wants to give you, you know, X amount of dollars doesn't mean that, you know, maybe you should take his safety into account and, you know, like they say, just say no. But your thoughts, Melissa?
Yeah, I agree. I really actually felt bad. I mean, he hadn't fought in a while, just about a little over a year. And before that, he'd been over a year.
Months.
You know, and I agree. I was concerned. Just the way that he was knocked down and as quickly as he was knocked down, it just like his head wasn't in the fight or he just wasn't really prepared for what was going to be asked of him in the ring. And I really had the sense that, you know, maybe it's time. Because he had when he fought, what was it, Lemieux?
Yes.
That was a tough fight. So, and I don't know, maybe I kind of agree with you. I think it's time for him to really think about moving along in his career into something else.
Professor?
Well, I think I think I would say his handlers, I think it was poor matchmaking. That's what I think it was. Because you have to look at the landscape of his career. The guy started at cruiserweight as a professional. Okay. Now, he came off a year layoff last year from the David Lemieux knockout and fought, what, I think it was 3 rounds. He knocked the guy out in like 3 rounds. That was at 160. Now, a year later, you're going to move him down to 54. Debut, never fought at 54. And you're going to put him in there with that level of competition?
Mm.
First of all, I wouldn't even put him in a 10-rounder. He would have been in a 6 or 8-rounder just to get your feet wet, to get your body used to those quicker, faster guys at the weight class, you know. Not that type of level of competition where listen to how they announced him last night. They said the hard hitting right there. You put them in there with a hitter.
Yeah.
Why would you do that in his debut at 54 coming down after being out of the ring for a year? That didn't make sense. So I just think as far as his handlers, that was just, it just got it wrong, you know, with this career. Just got it wrong. I wouldn't have took that fight.
Jim?
Yes, sir.
I know you didn't, you say you didn't get a chance to watch it, but, I mean, you know, when you think of Curtis Stevens and you think of the different points that you know, we've all brought up, what are your thoughts? I mean, you know, we've all talked about, you know, the business, the handlers and so forth. I mean, your thoughts as somebody that's actually been in the ring.
So the question is we're talking about him going down in weight like that?
Yes, continuously.
Well, the thing is, it's very hard for me to explain it to you, so I have to explain it to you on the nerdiest level that I can explain it. So the thing that keeps every man and every woman balanced is their, for lack of a better word, pH balance, if you will. When you go down in weight and try to fight, what you have done was you have thrown off all the systems settings in your body. All those settings, all your body has to reset itself. It's not enough just to lose the weight, but your body has to be able to get adjusted to being down at those particular weights. When you're talking about 5 or 6 pounds or more, and I was talking about my cousin Chris Bird when he moved down from heavyweight to light heavyweight. You would think, here, this man is heavyweight champion of the world, moving down to light heavyweight or middleweight or whatever weight that was, that he was going to absolutely kill his opponent. But because his body had not physically and chemically adjusted to being under that type of pressure with a fighter who may not punch as hard but who's punching faster, who's moving faster, well, then your body's not adjusted to that. Your mind is not adjusted to that, just like you know, a guy like Roy Jones, who moved up in weight, but then he went back down in weight. And if you notice, when he went back down in weight, it threw his body off to the point where he could no longer sustain taking punches, so to speak. You know, and if you go to look at the body of anybody who was bigger, who had a long career, you rarely see where they drop weight and were successful, because it's a whole dynamic to the molecular structure of the body that it has to get adjusted to being at that weight. the levels of stress, the levels of the heart, and just everything that comes along with that. And people don't consider the science of it. They only think of the physicalness of it. But it's so much more when a person lose weight and he has to if you I'm trying to think of a word. He tries to fight at a smaller weight and do all the things that he used to do. The body just is confused at the end of the day, because the body is one big computer.
Well, I guess that makes sense on a nerdy type level. Unfortunately, I'm not a nerd, so it didn't really make the wrong. But anyway.
I'm sorry. I exposed myself.
Melissa, I know we always keep you on forever, and we know you do have a life. So tonight we're going to let you out on time.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you as always, JK, and so great to speak with Lamont and Gibran, and I thank you as always for having me on. And if you can catch if you can find the replay of the Ronica Jeffries Eva Wallstrom fight, I really do recommend it. It was a really, really excellent bout and hard fought by both fighters. And otherwise, have a great week and talk to you soon. Thank you.
Melissa, is there any word on Clarissa Shields?
I hear she's back in the gym. She's cleared to start training. She's really excited to see her, to get back with her trainer. I don't know whether there's a fight coming up. The fight she was going to be having a fight this month, but because of a knee injury, she had to postpone it. I don't know what the status of that is yet. That hasn't really been announced. And other than that, there's been, lots of fun and games about having a crossover MMA boxing match, but which I think people are just bored, want to look at that. But she is healthy again and back in the ring, getting ready to fight again.
Thank you so much, Melissa. You have a great week, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Great. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
Gibran, any fights, anything, any rumors or news that you have for us, and your final thoughts, and we're going to let the champ close this out.
No problem. Next week we got Carl Frampton stepping back in the ring. It'll be on ESPN versus Emmanuel Dominguez. And DAZN will have boxing next week. That'll be coming out of Texas. It'll be Virgil Ortiz Jr. Headlining that card. Just get ready for more boxing. Oh, and last but not least, Mr. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. will be fighting next week in Mexico. Getting his feet back wet in boxing. So we shall see what he brings to the table. And it seems like they're finalizing the deal for Jesse Vargas to take on Wami Magia on September 14th to take over the Cinco de Mayo date that Canelo has unfortunately passed on. So they should be coming out with an official statement this week with that fight, and hey, that should be a great slugfest if it materializes. So you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gibran Clemon. That's JABRANCLEMON. And champ, let them know where they can find you at.
Well, hey man, thank you all, as always, to you guys, man. I love this brotherhood. I'm sorry I haven't been available to be on the show, man, but the show is definitely part of who I am and it's a part of my life, and I love being invited back. It's very rare that retired fighters get platforms to say the things that they want to say, you know, without feeling like, oh, I'm stepping on somebody's feet. So I just love the fact that JK gives me this opportunity to just keep it 100 with you guys. I thank you guys for supporting boxing, man. Without boxing, there wouldn't be people like myself and other people around, man, because, you know, boxing is so therapeutic for so many people. I've seen so many people that were coming to the gyms I've been in over the years that had regular jobs, and they would be frustrated. They would take out their frustrations in the gym and go home and love their families, man. I just love what boxing has been able to do for the world, because it has really been a way for me to make some of the greatest friendships in the entire world. So I just want to say in closing, man, just please continue to support boxing, man. We need you guys, and we need you guys, and we need you guys. And I hope that you guys will continue to support us on. And remember, even bad criticism is good criticism, because I'd rather you be talking about me than not speaking my name. So bad or good, man, I appreciate you guys. My name is Relentless Lamar Brewster. I'm the former heavyweight champion of the world. I hold the world record for the fastest knockout in the heavyweight championship fight, 53 seconds of the first round over Andrew Galata, that I'm very proud of. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. And I've just had an amazing life, man, and I just thank you guys for always supporting me, good or bad. Thank you for supporting boxing, and I hope to speak to you guys next weekend. Talk to you later. God bless.
Well, don't forget to support our GoFundMe page, everyone. We belong on the air. We've had quite a bit of contributions from our fans. Check out our GoFundMe page. And with that, don't forget, you can check us out right on the Futures Corner on Facebook, which also covers the Weekend Wrap. So have a great night, everyone. We look forward to talking to you next week. And don't forget to catch us Tuesday with K9 Bundridge on the Dog Pound. So have a great night. Have a great week. And if you're all about boxing, check us out Tuesday evening. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.